Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about sources of data. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at some cover crop rebates that you can apply for by December 1st. Ag History Minute, we'll talk about the first trials. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events, and we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueker, all with Tilth Agronomy. You guys having flashbacks over the weekend from Cleveland?
Yep.
Packers did not do well. And this was, the worst part was it was at home, too.
Yeah, Bill got to experience the full glory and the fun.
Like you asked Todd on Monday, like the crowd was in it.
Yeah, you could hear them.
Like by the second and third quarter, no. But
at the end, though, they seem to be back.
Yeah. So once we finally scored.
That's all you can ask for from a crowd. That's a tough. What is the hardest about this loss is the. Most of the time, Vegas has things figured out. And they know how to set lines and in general. And, like, this was one of. This is the. Like, in the last, like, 4 years of football, this is one of the biggest losses compared to the line.
Right.
So. Obviously, they laid an egg.
Yeah.
You know, they did not play to expectations at all. And then to, like, add insult to injury, literally injury, the insult was Tucker Kraft out for the year. So the guy who we're all pumped about,
who's the
so good.
He's the juice on the
week before. Right. He's the one that gets him going. That's a good point, too, is a team that can play very flat on offense, he's the one that was getting him going on offense.
Right.
So. Yeah, it's.
I think on this podcast a couple weeks ago, I said something about the Packers were just playing with their food or something.
Yep.
I just looked it up. There's a text chain between the three of us. Sunday, 12:45 p.m. Packers playing with their food again.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting in Lambeau pushing this out to you guys because I'm like, God dang it, we're back to doing this screwing around again. And they moved the ball. They just got to the red zone and then fumble, miss field goal. Then they had that stretch where it was, what was it, false start, holding, sack. It was like four plays in a row, and it was fourth and 42 or whatever it was. And it's like, well, you're out of field goal range and everything now. And they didn't even punt.
Nope, yeah.
How do you lose a game and we didn't even punt?
I saw that statistic.
Really? I didn't see that statistic. That's a wild statistic.
Zero punts, the fumble, and I think didn't Jordan Love throw in an interception at one point, too? Or not?
They had a fourth down that should have been an interception.
He had
a yeeted.
He yeeted it.
Yeah.
And it was in the triple coverage, yeah.
Yeah. So they're.
And then he should have had a 100-yard pick six he threw, but the guy just dropped it. They only had seven possessions, and Carolina played their game like they ran the ball and held the ball. So you figured they had two field goals and a touchdown. That's three. Missed field goal, fumble, interception.
They had an interception for sure, yeah.
And then
it was right after they fumbled.
And then that fourth down where they threw into the end zone, there's your seven possessions.
Yep. The running back learned the hard way that Key and Peele are not always correct.
Yeah, that was the best.
He thought you got two pumps.
Two pumps.
But you apparently do not. You get one pump.
And that was on the far end. Like, we're on one goal line. That happened on the north end zone. I didn't even see it happen.
I was gonna say, you probably are like, what is
going on? And then all of a sudden.
So you didn't see the pumps?
Did they show it on the Jumbotron?
No.
They zoomed in on his.
They showed nothing. And then everyone was happy when the guy missed the extra point, which.
Well, and
that was big.
That didn't help either. Our kicker missed two field goals.
Just one.
Just
but
one.
It feels like more.
It feels like more, yeah.
Just because
I think he missed.
He missed two last.
Two last week, yeah.
It's 3 in 2 weeks he missed.
He's definitely hurt or something, right? Like,
he
what
is.
Do we do? Yeah.
And right. LaFleur after finally admitted.
Well,
that.
Well then why not the other guy that kicked that really long one?
Eversick or whatever. Yeah.
It was almost.
Back.
it was almost, it feels like Haversick broke the record for longest Green Bay kick ever. And then you're sitting there as the other kicker and you're going like, uh-oh, my job
yeah.
gone here. Like, I better come back
right.
sooner. I don't know, like, yeah, if what they're thinking with this. But
well, it's the same problem we always have, special teams.
Yes, true.
They're mismanaging special teams. Like, McManus is older.
Yeah.
He's hurt. And yet he's out there playing when you have a perfectly healthy younger guy who, like you said, kicked a super long field goal.
By the way.
And
the Carolina kicker was a rookie who won the game.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he bolted. He kicked that field goal. I don't know if it was the holder or the kicker, but as soon as that went through, he bolted to the guy with the X on the jersey that caught the ball, the ball boy that...
Oh, yeah. Oh, to go get it.
He grabbed it.
Really?
Yeah. Like, he sure. just... be
sure, like I...
Because, of course, that happened on our end. Like,
sure.
Right. You have to see the...
Got to see the game winner.
Got to see the game winner. But we're like... We're at an angle, so you can't tell anything until you see the crowd behind the goalpost.
Sure.
Cheer or not cheer. And they weren't cheering, so we knew it went through.
Did you know that the two pumps that Rico Dowdle, however you say Dowdy?
Dowdle.
Dowdle. His so he's getting fined also by the NFL.
And he started a GoFundMe page.
But he, yes.
He said it's going to charity, though.
So, yes, he's going to give the...
Dumb question. I haven't followed this pump thing. Why can we do two and not three?
No, that's just...
If it's a made-up thing.
A made-up skit.
So you can't do any.
Yeah, Google up Key and Peele.
You guys were playing it.
Yeah, it's an old skit. It's quite a while ago.
Yeah.
And
you can't do any.
Not really.
Probably not, no. But
it's...
Do you remember like the East West Bowl stuff, all the
kind of
stuff? It was that same vintage, but they did a fake game where Keegan Michael Key was the guy who ran the ball in, and then he would celebrate, and he was doing like crotch pumps.
Yes, pelvic thrusts.
Pelvic thrusts. And Peele was the ref, and he's watching him.
He's like,
and he'd do two, and then he'd do a third, and then he'd get flagged. And he just kept doing it every time he scored. It was like, everybody would be watching him. And finally, the last one, Peele's like on his knees, like staring at Key's crotch.
Waiting for three.
And it's like a micro pelvic thrust.
Yes, very small.
And then, yeah, it throws a flag. And then, of course, they have to do the John Madden telestrator and they draw.
Oh, got it.
Where he thrusts.
Okay, all right. I thought it was a rule. Like,
no.
You could do two, but not three.
No, the penalty was for unsportsman.
Yeah, it was.
For the celebrations itself, not the amount of pelvic thrust.
So they didn't throw the flag until the second thrust.
Yes.
Because when you watch the replay back, he does one.
Maybe you get one.
He does two, and then the flag.
Probably was the guy standing under the goalpost, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was the one right by.
He's right there.
Yeah.
Because there was some skirmish after that touchdown, so I thought somebody just taunted or just jawed. You know, I know they're trying to, like, clean a little bit of that up, but I didn't know they were pelvic.
The best, the rule is prolonged or excessive celebration. So in this case, it must be one thrust, okay. Two is prolonged or excessive.
Whatever it was, it worked out in our favor.
Well, I think ever since the Randy Moss thing, isn't there too like a level of class, I guess you would have to
disgusting.
Say to it. Like,
you can't have a disgusting act.
Because Randy Moss's thing was when he pulled the fake pulling his pants down and mooting the crowd.
That was actually clever.
It was clever, but.
Especially because it was a Viking.
Yeah.
You know, if it was like a random, Cincinnati Bengal, no one would care, but.
Right. It was Randy Moss.
Viking Randy Moss.
Yeah. All right, you guys ready to talk about our topic for the day? Bill, what do you got for us on seed data
data? Yeah, I think if growers out there haven't been talked to by their seed rep, I think they will probably be happening soon. And I guess just wanted to discuss, like, how do we figure out where to go from here? Like, we have all these hybrids to choose from. Let's get some real data. And I know we've talked about some of this in the past, but let's get some real data. And where can you find that?
I think this is exciting, Bill, because we talked about seed guides last week and how that was exciting to get that sort of catalog in the mail. And then you sent the new one this week that you got a Shields Toyland catalog.
Yeah, like random, like Shields.
So, yeah, that one has not showed up in our mailbox, but I've heard it from others. Have you gotten it, man?
Not either.
No.
I wouldn't say I shop at Shields a ton. Like, I've bought stuff there, but I don't.
I do.
Do you buy? I haven't been in the Shields in like.
Yeah.
Do you have like a 10 years. Some sort of member?
Yeah, we've got a Shields card. Yeah,
that's okay. Probably.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep.
So this is the like sort of second Christmas or second excitement of when plot data comes out. Now, what has been hard is that traditionally, years ago, you would get the seed guy, the seed person, the seedsman or seed lady would come visit you when they had plot data,
right?
And that was all out. But now they visit you before that because they don't want to, you know, lose out on your sale potentially. So that has been a change that we've had to adapt to and make sure. I feel like as that change come, we've actually relied less on current plot data because that's changed that. We've been...
You kind of just bypass it because we're going right to the sale.
Right. You've looked at maybe old, like last year's, like 2024 data in this case, or previous years, but then the new data, you're like, well, I got to make a choice now. I got to at least put something down. And that is one thing that your seed person can typically do is just put a variety down, just write something, you know, put a order in, and then you can tweak it later too. You're probably going to know certain varieties that you want, maybe not the amounts though, so you could tweak the amounts later, and then maybe you could add one or two varieties that you either saw in plot data that maybe piqued your interest. But I do think we're seeing, in a big picture, we're seeing less reliance on plot data, and I was thinking about that for this episode of why, and I think that's why
that makes sense
is because we're needing to order before we have the data. So
sometimes you're ordering before you even harvested.
Yeah, right.
Your own stuff. Like you don't even know what last year's corn did, let alone what this year's is.
Yeah. So it's obviously it's good to get those discounts. It's all that stuff is good. Have that conversation with your seed salesman and how you can still have data in this scenario, because I think that is good for everybody to have that.
Matt, I didn't realize Todd would be this jacked up about this topic, but it makes sense.
This is like his Christmas.
Dude,
He loves seed guides. He loves data.
Even
plot data.
Riding with Derek and the plot, when he does plots, it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I love pulling our way wagon to do plots is fun. The harvest is fun. I don't know why the planting of them always is very difficult because we're just so busy at that time.
And it's a laborious.
Yes.
Art.
But the harvest part, it's great. And the data, we just need more data is my feeling of this is the more data you have to look at, the more accurate we're going to be and the better choice.
Part of the reason we need more data is because these varieties don't last.
Correct.
You have a year, maybe two, to really look at them, and then it's on to the next one.
Gonzo.
Yep. So you know, it used to be, you know, 53W or, you know, whatever.
30-30, whatever, yeah.
You had this variety that you planted on the farm for a decade or more, and now it's like if you see 3 years out of a variety,
right?
It's good, but it's not going to last more than that, most likely.
So I think I've kind of grouped it in three separate categories. We have independent data, which is universities, and then independent CROs like what Derek does, company data, just straight from whatever seed company you have, and then your on-farm stuff that you do, your neighbor does, your buddy from a different, you know, your buddy from college does, whatever. Like, you have on-farm data. Those are kind of the three pools that you can find stuff from. So the independent data, UW has done their corn and soybean and corn silage trials forever, and actually this year it was the bean trial for UW was literally 100 yards from where we're speaking right now. So that was kind of neat.
Right.
Right here. I
mean, you don't know what's in it necessarily, but it's right there. I think that's a good thing to think about as we're talking about all these is is vicinity or location compared to your location? Like, how close is that data to you? How similar is the soil type and soils? And that's one thing that maybe as you're weighting and putting on how much to use that data, if it's a lot closer to your farm and is similar, that's you should pretty heavily rely on that data.
The soybean one is out. Conley puts that out pretty quick. I think this year he actually put an Excel file out, and then before he could make the nice fancy PDFs and all that. Now the PDF version is out. It's a little more user-friendly just to look at. I'm sure Excel you can manipulate how you want to get look at how the data you want to look at it. The corn one, their goal is always right before or right after Thanksgiving. That was Lauer's goal all along. Yeah, obviously, he's gone now. I don't.
One thing in finding that is that there's a kind of an old website that's sort of Lauer's old website and still has the data from like 2012 to 2023. And then there's a newer, and it's through Crops and Soils Extension, kind of the.
That's a more like they put.
There's like more updates to that.
Soybeans are there. Corn is there. Wheat is there. They do a lot of stuff in that one website. I was disappointed, Todd, on that old website that Lauer had. Our WAPAC, our state crop consultant organization, used to do a plot. We discontinued it a handful of years ago already now, but Lauer always did the statistical analysis for that. Right. So because he did the statistical analysis, he would put it up on his website.
Oh, sure.
And I don't see it there anymore. Right. So I don't know if it just got lost in the translation or...
I do believe, too, not that long ago when it was still on there, I tried clicking it and it didn't go anywhere. Okay.
Sure.
Anyway, so I'm like you say, I'm sure it's just...
I mean, it's really old data, but it's neat to go back and see the variety. Like, I always like to go back 15 years and look at the
You keep all that? I should... I do not. And
just to go back and, that variety. Oh, yeah, I remember
that. Think of all your old girlfriends.
Right, pretty much.
Little black book of corn.
Yep. So other states I looked, Minnesota has one, Illinois, Ohio State. I get further away, Tennessee, Kentucky, Texas A&M. They all do yield trials like we do here in Wisconsin. I don't know if Michigan State does. I thought they did, but all the websites that I could look for, just like you said, that didn't go anywhere. So I don't know if they've discontinued it or I'm just looking in the wrong spot. I think globally, the first trials are awesome. I wish we could. We were talking before we recorded this morning. Like, we could get a little bit north. I think Ripon might be the most north one.
Yeah, Plover, Ripon. Trying to think what the other ones were. Toma was one. So I had it pulled up before because some of this year's data just came out yesterday.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they had.
And the first trial stands for Farmer Independent Research of Seed Technologies. So it's, farmer driven, and there's a lot of hybrids in those trials too. It's comprehensive.
It to me, what they're doing, like you say, with this bill is just how much it's spread through the Midwest.
Yeah.
And even out there's some in New York, Pennsylvania. It's just a large data set that we don't have this, Each state has their university sort of program, but then it doesn't cross state lines into the look at different varieties and that kind of thing. And I do really, their website's good on summarizing the data. I sometimes have a hard time finding exactly where, because there's so much things to click around that's a little bit tougher to find sometimes what I want. But it is a really good tool and thing to use for different harvest reports. One thing to note on the, and they do state this, but it says the top 30 harvest report. So on their reports, it's not going to list all the varieties that were in the plot. It just tells you the top 30. And this is to protect the seed companies. Nobody wants to enter seed in that's going to get their butt kicked and lose. And you look at the bottom of that plot. Seed companies don't want losses. They can't take that. They can't.
Which is
they can't
understandable, right?
And not even they and some of these hybrids might have a loss in Ripon, Wisconsin, but might do really well in Plover, Wisconsin.
Right.
They don't know that. They don't know which ones they're going to lose. So one of the things to protect the seed companies that's done, and you got to watch as somebody picking out varieties, is all of the varieties, do they have a yield next to them in the plot layout? Or later on, it'll tell you like all the varieties that were in, you know, full test. So the one I'm looking at has 32 products listed.
But two didn't
make it in the list because they were at the bottom. You can figure out which those two are for your situation and then not plant them, those varieties. But from a company standpoint and a seed company, they were getting hit that, oh, your company sucks as a whole because you had these two losers. Well, those two are bench players for a certain area, but they'd be starters in a different area. They just aren't in the right situation. So that's why they do that. I actually think at first when I found that out or as I'm looking at it, it was actually quite frustrating. However, I don't completely understand why they do that. And because you want to help protect the companies that are entering into your data and want them to have a reason why to do it.
Then there's independent contract research outfits like Tilth Research that does things. And usually that's hard to find because they're giving the data to the customer that's paying you to do the research. So that's kind of tough. But we do the Tilth Fantasy Trials, which if I do recall, there's some talk about some revealing next week.
Next week, it looks like it's, yeah.
So you
plots
can
were just harvested. And
you can listen to me lose again by half a bushel.
Derek wouldn't tell me. He just said, I believe you all were here when he said that. He said there's something very interesting that happened.
He did.
But he wouldn't even hint at what.
No, he's really good
so
at that.
So if it's that, Bill, you finally did beat us and you crushed us.
That would be.
Like, or he, but he wouldn't even, yeah, there was no even like hint. And I could not even get a little out of
him. Couldn't crack him.
Yeah.
No, he's.
So something interesting in the data that we're going to
tune in.
But
if you go to tilthtrials.com, you can see our past stuff there. So that is public.
Yep. So our tilthtrials.com, you kind of scroll down, it shows the different entries and then the results. So you could kind of see it by team, which most listeners don't necessarily care, but you could just also see by which variety it, you know, is the winner, and then he's got some of the statistics in that. So again, for this was the idea behind this was to help, like we just said, First Trials doesn't have trials in our area. So this was to help that.
Yep.
And hopefully in your local area, there's an independent crop consultant. There's another extension that's maybe doing some plots specific to your area.
The next group of data you could focus on is seed dealers, company data. Want you to take that with, obviously, a grain of salt and make sure that you're reading it correctly. Most companies, I thought it was just more the regional ones, but when I even went to Pioneer, you can find, go right to their website. They have yield data right on their website. You can search this year, whatever's entered in so far. You can go to previous years. So that's kind of neat. You can ask your local rep. I'm sure they'll flood your email box with
here's
plot data.
Here's this trial, this trial, this trial.
The one thing I do really appreciate, though, when I look at company data, is plots that have competitors.
Yep.
It's not just, and I'll pick Pioneer, not for any reason other than we were just talking about it, but like it'd be nice to have some other companies in to just to kind of calibrate that data, not just, oh, we beat ourselves. Okay. Now, I will say when I like if I'm on a farm and we're going to buy Pioneer or whatever company that is, and that's the company we've chosen, I'd like to have head-to-heads against each other. Because when I want a 93-day, well, which 93-day do I pick? And then if I get that head-to-head. So I'm talking a little bit out of both sides of my mouth, but for different reasons, I guess, is why I'm bringing it up. Is I do like head-to-heads against each other, if that's a specific company we're going to choose when I'm making seed recs. But at the same point, if you're looking at a plot, it's nice to have different companies in there.
I'm with you of this data is extremely valuable. So I want to thank all the, because our seed reps spend a lot of time pulling around weigh wagons, collecting all this data. It is difficult when there's just some watch outs with it, is that they can remove negative data. Like they could throw out ones that aren't good, you know, basically similar to what I said First Trials was doing. They're kind of throwing it out, but they're telling you what's all in here, but yeah, they're not listening.
They're not going to go out of their way to show you how they got beat.
Or, right. Yeah. Right. So in this case too, like if a variety, you know, you don't see a variety listed, that could mean it didn't do very well in plots that particular year or something like that. So there is some watch outs with it, but this data has gotten a lot better, and their websites to display this data they're all very good across all companies in general. They're good that you can search it up and then it'll show you the location and the different plot data, which is nice because, like you said, Bill, we get our inboxes sort of flooded with it. That's another way to receive it, but it was hard to receive all this data 20 years ago. They would give you a printout of it when they were selling you seed. Now, like I said, that's changed, but it's still all there and it's easy to get.
Yep.
So just have, you know, as a farmer, you have so much data at your fingertips. Now all these sources we just said are all easily, you know, Google them up and they're there for you to Sunday morning look at in your pajamas.
So. Yeah. And whenever you want. And there's several I found. Dairyland, Rank, I know does it. Pioneer, that's, I think even DeKalb had some. I didn't keep going, but I'm sure if you have a certain company that we didn't talk about, and it might be there. Last kind of set is, you know, on farm. Like, what are you doing on your own farm? What's your neighbor doing? What's your buddy from college doing? You know, when these guys come to sell you products, and you're not sure of something, maybe something's new, a lot of these biologicals, maybe they have trial products that they have trial inventories that maybe they'll let you have a gallon of something or a small plot bag. Or I helped harvest a plot yesterday, and it was, the guy got 8 plot bags of different varieties from his seed rep, and he planted it out. So there's stuff out there if you want to try, or just
do it yourself.
Just do it yourself, right?
Like, buy a couple bags here, a couple bags there to try something. And
it's taking the time in spring to do it correctly. But do it correctly. Market correctly. There was market in the field correctly, whether it's stakes or you write it on a sheet of paper at planting, because there was some confusion yesterday where the stakes were put. And
sure.
Was it on the left side? Was it on the right side? Yeah. Split the planter? Did they put one variety in the whole? Like, there was a whole bunch of confusion. You think you're going to remember in November or October what you did in May.
Right.
You're not.
You will not.
You will not remember.
Well, and if you have, you know, this monitor in your planter that you can set up and do a lot of this stuff, as long as you do it right, then that gives you something to look back at.
They had it in the monitor. They just couldn't remember if we split the...
Sure. Say, what's hard in the monitor is splitting up the plant. Like, did you do it... Like, say a 12-row. Did I do split planter? Did I do...
Right. The whole planter.
The whole, you know...
Did I go down and back?
Did I... Right. Did I do 3 rows, 4 rows? Like, how did I do it?
Yep.
And we've done it all kinds of ways. And to be honest, the biggest part I like on farm is if you can replicate it.
Yep.
So go down and then come back, and that would be your replication. And if you can get 3 replicates, it's even better. But 2 is sort of the minimum.
Right.
But I remember days when we first started, and it, we really didn't replicate well with those WAPAC. You know, it was just like split planter.
Well, the idea with the WAPAC trials was you got a full bag of seeds, so you're supposed to do 2 or 3 reps.
Right. So the WAPAC trials did a better job of kind of...
And the goal was to actually not just fill the planter, go down and back, and then one rep was, you know, you had a 12-row and you had a 6-row combine head. It wasn't just, well, we're going to go down and that's one and come back, that's another. It was actually suck it out of the planter and then put it again...
Somewhere else.
Yep.
Or start on one side of the field, plant down.
Yeah, we did
drive to the other side of the field when you plant back. And that's obviously now a lot easier with GPS. You can
Right.
Dial that right in.
And if you really wanted to be specific, you'd be looking at soil types and making sure your soil types are similar.
Yeah. But back 2012, 09, 08, when we were doing this, it was like measuring, yeah, I think we got enough room. And then you get to the end and you're like, darn it, we don't.
We don't.
So, you have combine data, make sure you're calibrated. I think if you're not calibrated, obviously everything's going to be off. So you can't take that specific number for gospel, but if one variety's off by 10 bushel, they're all going to be off by a certain amount, I would think. So you're going to have some relativity there. I wanted to have just a fuzz discussion about testers, like moisture testers. And I think, Todd, you have some thoughts.
No, I agree with you on this, Bill. For one, whatever tester you pick, just do that. Do whatever you did the same each time and replicate. The
process.
And this goes for everything in any sort of research. You want to replicate the process. But one of the biggest struggles we see is with these handheld moisture testers. So you got the Mini-GAC, or Agritronix has a really good one. And they're good. Maybe on higher moisture corn, they're maybe not as good. But in general, they're fine. And as long as you use that same tester always, it's fine. But if the way wagon is started up running and emptying out and you got this tester on the tailgate of the truck and it's bouncing around, it is not going to be accurate at that point. Whatever process you did, make sure it's replicable and replicated. And then I prefer in general the tabletop testers, the GACs, or go to the co-op and have them use those. But sometimes it's hard. Then you got to bag it up, take it with you. It's sitting in your truck. You're running a bunch of tests later where it's nice just to be able to run them there, dump them, and go. So I think either way is fine as long as you're doing it the same way and same person doing that and really, really making sure that that's done well.
And then what to look for. Like when we get all that, we just talked to you where to find it, right? All this stuff. What are you looking for? I really like multi-year data. Like if you can find hybrid that's replicated over years. That's the cool part about UW trials is not every hybrid, but a lot of hybrids, they'll be in the plots last year. So you can see, okay, it did good last year. It did good this year in my area. And it did good this year on like all the locations. So there's multi-year. So basically multi-year, multi-site data is the best if you can find it. That's hard to do. I remember been years now, but I remember at some meeting we were at, Lauer was there, and he said, statistically, farmers should be looking at more reps of a certain whatever. He's talking about hybrids, but it could be biological or whatever. More reps than just bigger acreage. Like, statistically, it's better to have more replicates of something, even if it's a small area, than just one 2,000 foot stretch down a pass of a field. It's better to have 200 foot, but replicate that four times than. So, again, if you have more reps, it's good. And I like to target varieties when I'm choosing, like target ones that are above the trial average. We can't win. We just got done talking about the Packers not winning. We're not going to win every year. We're not going to win every game.
Right.
We're not going to win every plot, but
it's consistency to pull out. So is it consistently in the top half?
Right.
In your area, did it do well? I would agree with you that picking out plot winners has been not as successful as you'd think, because that plot winner is going to lose the next plot, or the next year's a little different. And I would say that's one thing that the fantasy trials have taught us, that to win that plot, you just got to pick above the average.
We can't have the bottom.
You can't have the bottom of the
plot. You can't have the bottom.
You can't have.
But you don't need the top.
Right. Thank you, Matt. You said it perfectly. So I like what you're saying with that, Bill, is that you're just trying to. You're not necessarily even trying to pick out winners. You're just trying to avoid the losers and pick the B team. Like if you could pick an all B team, you're going to do fine next year.
Yep.
It's if let's use you like baseball, Bill. I don't know. Like, in a way, they don't always still. And basketball is going on right now. And I was just talking to somebody coaching, and I didn't know they were doing it at the particular school they're doing. They've got like an A team, and then they took like the B team guys, but made like two, split them equally, so there's not like a C team.
Sure.
So that there's not that C team that's just losing everything, and those kids are going to quit.
Right.
You know, we're just,
right.
It's not. Yeah, they're going to all realize. So they, yes, they still have the A team, but you're in this case, you're wanting to pick that middle of the pack.
Yep.
Is okay, and that's fine. So yeah.
And then in a lot of trials, they'll star varieties. Well, what does that mean? Well, most of the time, especially in UW trials, the star means it's not significantly different than the highest yielder. So again, might not have the highest yield, but statistically, when that's run, there's no difference between the highest one and that one. So those are another good things to look at. And I actually like plots that have like a, I'll call it a known check. I had a grower several years ago, doesn't farm anymore. It's a pain in the butt at planting, but he always had one hybrid that he wanted to replicate in the plot. So he would start with that one. We would plant two hybrids. Then we'd plant that one again. Then we'd plant two other ones. Then we'd plant that one again. So he felt like it took out field variation. Like if you have the trial check at one end of the field and then a whole 40 over is your last hybrid. Well, he felt like if we put that check in a bunch of times,
sure,
you could always compare it to the check,
yep,
closest to it. I don't think many people or any people do that, but that's just another way to, like, if there's a variety, you know, that just, it yields this in this field and that's our check, we know what we can compare it to.
Yeah. The winner's not always the winner. Even if you have the top two winners of a plot, you're not guaranteed to win the entire plot if you, at least in our fantasy trials, happened to me a couple of years ago. I had the top two varieties and still didn't win.
You're not bitter or anything.
No. No, don't think about it at all. Don't wake up screaming in the night about that year ever. Sorry, got lost there. What? What were we talking about?
One last thing for farmers to think about on this is pick a time that you look at. Like, is it around Halloween? Is it around Thanksgiving? Is it, you know, the... Again, since that went away, that we don't have that time when it's at your contact with your seed salesperson anymore, or it's rare, pick a random date on the calendar every year, the 5th of November.
I say later's probably better, yeah, just knowing that a lot of stuff isn't, like I said, the first trial just came out.
Right. So a lot of, and like we said, typically UWs come out right ahead of Thanksgiving, right around that Thanksgiving week.
Yep.
So I do think Thanksgiving is the best time. However, it's almost too late to change much on your seed purchasing, but make sure you're still looking at the data and picking a time that you're going to sit down and really go through it. So,
all right, there you go. There's an idea of where to look for data when you're looking to review some varieties that you might be purchasing. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. A little less than a month from now, you can apply for cover crop rebates. DATCAP will open the application period for crop insurance premium rebates for planting cover crops at 12 p.m. on December 1st, 2025. DATCAP administers this program in partnership with the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Risk Management Agency. There is 800,000 or 160,000 acres of coverage to be awarded on a first-come, first-served basis. Recipients will receive $5 per acre on their summer 2026 crop insurance premium. This will be for acres planted with cover crops in 2025, then planted to an insurable crop the following year. Producers who receive state or federal cost sharing to plant cover crops in 2025 are not eligible for this year's program. Applicants should use their FSA 578 form to complete the application. There's no limit on acres an applicant can apply for, but applicants should keep seed receipts and planting records, as DATCAP will conduct audits to ensure that cover crops were planted. The web-based rebate application information about eligibility and FAQs will be made available at covercroprebate.wi.gov. The application will remain open until 12 p.m. on January 30th, 2026, or until the program funding is exhausted. So there you go. If you're putting out cover crops or did put out cover crops this year, that can be some savings for next year. Now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So since we're talking trial data, I'm going to talk about the history of the first trials. So the Farmers Independent Research of Seed Technologies, or FIRST, trials provide timely, unbiased comparisons of innovative seed genetics to improve yield and profitability for American corn and soybean farmers. Mission began in 1997 when 64 corn grain hybrids from 14 seed company sponsors were tested at 12 sites in Illinois. The program now tests corn grain, corn silage, and soybean seed products in 15 states, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Delaware, and Maryland. They utilize 12 field managers and their independent businesses to identify, plant, and harvest over 500 tests at 300 locations. That was data from 2023. Farmer members assist in test site collection or selection, conduct all production operations, and provide all inputs except seed. It's planting and crop harvest. Companies willing to sponsor the research decide which products they want to test, where to test them, and they would provide the seed. Only a select group of products are tested. FIRST has grown into an association of farmers and businesses organized to measure and report the yield and agronomic performance of corn and soybean seed products. They encourage the use of this information by farmers, consultants, agronomists, and seed industry representatives for improving yield and profitability of American farm operations. On average, their test data is reported within 2 days of harvest. So not too much lag there between harvest and having it out there.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's really, really easy now to find us. You can go to Apple Podcasts on your iPhone or on your Android phone, download an app like Spotify, and there you can search Tilt Talk Radio, and you can find us and listen in, and you can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcast, and you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilt Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll get into our Cool Beans, That's Corny, and some current events. So, Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans this week. We talked about John Kinzenbaugh's historic auction last week. Well, it's over now, and the top 10 tractors from that auction are on their way somewhere across the Midwest. We've got mostly Midwest, a little bit east and south. So, Nebraska, Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, and Texas were the purchasers of the top 10 tractors happened to live. The top tractor was a 4020 with monster truck tires on it, which I thought was kind of interesting. That tied for the most expensive tractor, went for $50,250. Then the second, or the other first place, was a 1969 Massey Ferguson 1130 that also went for $50,250. That one came here to Wisconsin. The 4020 went to Ohio. Then you've got another just standard John Deere 4020, sold for $36,000, went to Texas. 1973 John Deere 4430 that went to Illinois for $34,000, a 1972 4020 that went to Pennsylvania for $33,000, 1975 IH Farmall 1566 went to New York for $32,000, 1973 John Deere 4430 went to Iowa for 32. 1978 John Deere 4640. That one also came to Wisconsin, sold for about $30,000. A 1966 IH Farmall 1206 went to Iowa for $30,000. And a 1974 4630 went to Nebraska and brought in about $28,000. So really, top to bottom of the auction, $28,000 to $50,000 for those top 10 tractors. That's pretty good deal for John, I think, on his auction. I don't think he expected that Monster Truck 4020 to go for as much as it did. I mean, it does look cool.
It looks cool.
Yeah. I wonder how it drives with those oversized tires, but yeah. All right. Our That's Corny this week is anhydrous ammonia. One small mistake can have life-changing consequences. It's something that we don't really see here in Wisconsin a lot anymore. That used to be more of it applied, but places like Nebraska tend to rely more heavily on anhydrous. And given its price point and availability, it looks like it'll be fairly popular this fall. They're anticipating a lot of farmers are likely to apply more NH3 this fall because of its availability and price point. When handling anhydrous ammonia, just remember safety precautions aren't simply a checklist to review and mark off your to-do list. They can help prevent a crisis. In recent incident shared by Chase DeWitts serves as a powerful reminder of the potential dangers of working with NH3, excuse me, and the importance of staying vigilant about safety. So in late October, what began as a routine equipment maintenance on the farm turned into a workplace accident where one of DeWitt's employees was left severely burned. Incident unfolded at a fill site with a bulk tank of NH3 that had a faulty O-ring on the metering system and allowed the product to leak. The farm is located near Steele, North Dakota. He and the employee discussed the O-ring replacement, but other priorities took precedence and it didn't happen. And further than on the day, the O-ring appeared to be functioning properly until it wasn't. And then once it started to get wet from product, it sweated, swelled, seemed to kind of fix itself. There was no leaking, but then it failed, and a fair amount of anhydrous blew out onto the employee. In a panic, the employee didn't turn to the emergency water-soaked tank that was located less than 10 feet away and immersed himself in water. Instead, he went to the farm shop, which was more than 150 feet away. Fortunately, another employee saw him, had some first aid training, and was able to step up and help him get out of his clothes and get water over the top of him. So it's the importance of training, knowing rather than running for help, he should have just doused himself with water, probably would have helped. But in a panic, I can see how you wouldn't do that. So
20 years ago at the co-op when I worked there, they had a cow tank full of water right next to the fill station.
Did you ever have any run-ins with it?
I had once where I was, the tank was full, turned all the valves off, and there was a little bit caught in the little nozzle thing, and I caught a little breath of it.
It knocks you
back. Oh, yeah. It takes your breath right away.
Yeah.
Like, it's craziness. Like, that was just a little cloud. I can't imagine if there's a bigger issue, but that's
real. Todd, I remember one of your farmers talking to him about an incident they had where a hose came loose on an applicator, and he ran out and fixed it, and I mean, he's lucky he didn't have any ill effects, but it could have been worse.
Right.
I mean, when you're spraying around like that, you really don't want to be anywhere near it.
It is I had an old farmer tell me once about it, is respect the danger of it, but don't fear it. Because if you're scared or you're fearing it, then you're going to make more mistakes. So remind me of how you'd almost describe, like treating a loaded gun. Like,
sure. Yeah.
You have respect for it, and you know,
understand what can happen.
Right? It'd be that same way, and I think there's other things on the farm we have to be vigilant and safe, but this is one where I think it can lull you into a sense of obviously most days were fine did it, Bill.
99.9% right, of the days are
fine.
Right, so it
kind of lulls you into like, well, tomorrow will be fine, and then you get some failure that you gotta watch. So,
yeah, I think like anything, it's just good to be cautious, good to be reminded of what can happen and what to do if you do have an issue. So now we'll wrap things up here with a Field Good Friday. Located not too far from the Tilth World headquarters, Wagner's Market features fresh produce and puts Black Creek, Wisconsin on the map. So peppers and cabbages and sweet corn, oh my, that's what visitors think when they visit Wagner's Market in Black Creek, a mainstay for more than 30 years at the Outagamie County Village's main intersection of Highways 54 and 47. Kim Camp owns the business with her brothers Chris and Nick Wagner, at the site of a grocery store that their grandparents and great-grandparents owned and ran. She said, when I was a kid, my parents decided they were going to go into farming. When she was 5, they sold produce from the farm in front of the grocery store, had cabbage in a pyramid on a tarp, had pumpkin, squash, things like that. Sold for a lot of years through the 80s. We would open in late July with sweet corn and be open into early November. And you can still find cabbage there, usually piled up in a nice pyramid on a wagon when the harvest comes in. The State Department of Transportation made State Highway 54 and Main Street in Black Creek wider in 1989, which changed everything for the Wagners. They purchased the store, took it down. My parents bought the lot from my grandparents in 1989, and they brought the building that's currently there to that spot. It was supposed to move off the lot later that year, but they filed with the village to keep it here, and the building never left. The building eventually became Wagner's Market, which Camp's parents, James and Margaret Wagner, operated. Continued to run it through the family, she said. In 2016, my husband took over here, trying to manage the business and help. My dad at that point had kind of retired and from farming, and my older brother was doing most of the farming. We farm a little over 1,000 acres and own probably 650 acres, but rent the rest. Most of the fresh produce comes from the Wagner farm, with the exceptions of bulk potatoes, onions, and carrots. Don't have the right soil to grow those. And the market also sells apples from Door County. So if you're interested in produce, it's a good place to stop. And like I said, they still get lots of cabbage. Big cabbage wagon draws a lot of people in. And they have peppers and pickles.
Pickled peppers.
Pickled peppers.
Is Peter Piper?
Peter Piper might work there. I don't know. Plus they have a lot of jarred and other things in the store. So it's a great place to check out. And good for them for being able to keep it going and running a popular business. So that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked about sources of data and where to look for trials when looking at corn, soybean, what have you. In our spotlight, we took a look at the cover crop rebate program, which will open December 1st. Ag History Minute, we talked about the history of the first trials. Cool beans this week. The top 10 tractors from John Kinzenbaugh's auction went around the Midwest and a little beyond. That's corny, as anhydrous ammonia can be dangerous if you're not careful. And Field Good Friday, Wagner's Market in Black Creek, providing fresh produce and putting Black Creek, Wisconsin on the map. Thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.